With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is a Manhattan-bound B Express train. The next stop is Grand Street.
Mind the gap.
Welcome to Skylines, the City Metric podcast. I'm John. As I record this, it's Wednesday afternoon. Here in the UK, it's Budget Day, which is probably slightly less exciting than it sounds. There's been all sorts of stuff in there for Britain's cities, which I will run down very, very quickly for you, because I know that's the good stuff you're really here for, isn't it? So the main message I've taken away from the budget is that those cities which didn't get metro mayors, which you remember the metro mayors, we bang on about them all the time. The cities which didn't get metro mayors have been royally screwed over. There's a huge new, well, not huge. Huge is overstating it. There is a new £1.7 billion fund called the Transforming Cities Fund, which is going to be spent on local transport outside London. And the six city regions, which have metro mayors and devolution deals, all automatically get a share of that proportional to their population. They're sharing about half of that fund between them. The cities which didn't get devolution deals, they kind of have to stick the begging bowl out. Like, there is another half of that fund. There's about 160 million left over, I think. But it's not at all clear which cities are going to get that or what it's going to be spent on. So, you know. Basically, the point is, you know, Manchester and Liverpool and Birmingham and so on, which have metro mayors, they get guaranteed money. Leeds and Sheffield don't. So maybe not having a mayor is not such a good thing. The other big city metric relevant element of today's budget was the housing commitments, which were, let's not beat around the bush, those were complete rubbish. There's a lot of talk of big numbers. The Chancellor is talking about getting house building rates above 300,000 a year by 2022, but that's, I mean, he's pulled that figure out his arse, hasn't he? It's like the set of reforms suggested to actually do that are nowhere near up to the job. There's some extra money for like small builders and a few pennies to sort of clean up land and so on. They're not touching the greenbelt. They're not doing anything fundamental, to address the business model problems, which if you're a regular listener, you'll recall we talked about shelter last week. There is talk of, like, in very high demand areas, councils are going to be able to borrow more to build housing. So that might be something to watch. But the big housing announcement was the abolition of stamp duty for first time buyers. Stamp duty is an absolutely ridiculous tax, which the buyer pays rather than the vendor, which is, you know, that's always seemed crazy to me because, you know, surely the vendor is the one who's got the cash on hand at that point. But, you know, it's there. We're kind of used to it. It's a stupid tax. The Chancellor's abolishing it for first-time buyers, which is, you know, it's great, right? You know, it's a big tax cut for younger, poorer people, except it's not. Firstly, because it only applies to those paying, I think it kicks in at 250,000. Double check that for me. But, you know, you have to be buying a pretty expensive property to be paying in the first place. So effectively, you're already reasonably wealthy if you're paying this. You know, you may not be wealthy compared to the people who own the house, but, you know, nonetheless, you're probably not doing too badly in life. The other thing, though, is it's not addressing housing affordability, because the amount of money that people, young people, have to buy homes is going to remain exactly the same. The Office of Budget Responsibility, the government's own budgetary watchdog itself, has said that this is in all likelihood just going to push house prices up. So house prices are not, you know, effectively the amount that your first-time buyers are paying will remain unchanged. It's just that the money that would previously have gone to the Treasury as stamp duty will now go to the person selling the house. Once again, the Chancellor is introducing a housing policy which is not really about affordable housing at all. It's not about helping more people onto the ladder. It's purely about propping up the housing market. Because if it stops going up and starts going down, that's going to annoy a lot of older, richer voters. And it's going to do untold, unspeakable things to the British economy. So, basically, the whole thing's a cluster fudge. But that's enough of this. That's enough of me talking about the budget. We're going to stop being so insular, so provincial. This week, we are going to talk about France. It's one of our nearest neighbours. But I really don't know much about how French cities work in either sort of practical terms, you know, how much power does the mayor have, or also sort of in the sort of, what's the sort of social geography of France? How do the cities see each other? How do Parisians see the provincials? And, you know, how do the provincial cities see Paris? So I decided to invite a couple of young French journalists and my acquaintance to tell me about these things.
Hi, I'm Marie Leconte, French person on the internet, I suppose, and journalist, mostly.
But primarily a French person on the internet.
Yeah, you could definitely argue that, yeah.
Hi, I'm Pauline Bock. I'm the French person at the New Statesman, I guess.
You did just sort of speak French for a bit, which made me worry I was being talked about and mocked in some way behind my back. But I don't think so. I think it was directions. I don't know.
Je te promets qu'on n'était pas en train de se moquer.
Non, c'est bon, t'inquiète pas.
I don't really know how to deal with that. Ouais-la-gare is really all I've got here.
We did talk about metro stops, actually, when we were speaking French. So, you know, there you go.
Okay, cool. So the reason I thought would be cool to do this, other than, you know, we were having this conversation in the pub and most of my ideas come from conversations in pubs, was I don't really know that much about how French cities work. I have this idea that Paris is very nice. It's always very clean.
It smells like piss.
Yeah, it's not nice or clean. Like, which bit of Paris did you go to?
The bit immediately outside Gare du Nord is not nice or clean. That's kind of, although they have made it recently nicer, but not so much with the clean. It's still very much not clean.
It's not clean. It'll never be clean. I don't think they can do it.
I know, I'm personally part of the anti-Paris brigade as well, so I feel like, you know, maybe I should come out and say, you know, Paris is terrible.
Okay, that's a good place to start, because, like, neither of you guys are Parisian, right?
We both hate it as well.
Yeah, I get really offended when people assume I'm from Paris.
Same.
In fact, you're sort of un-Parisian in different directions. You're from, like, exact opposite ends of the country,
actually,
right?
Yeah, actually we are. Yeah, because you're from the western coast.
Yes, I'm from Nantes on the western coast, which is the best bit of France.
Well, yeah, and I'm from the east, which obviously is not a coast, but a border with Germany, which makes everyone else, including you, probably think I'm German.
You have quite a Germanic name, which probably doesn't help.
Yes, I know. Yeah.
Let's start with that. What's wrong with Paris? Other than the distinct smell of urine outside Gare du Nord, which is interesting.
I would sort of say that the reason why I like London is because it's kind of a world unto itself. So obviously it is quite British, but it's very much, you know, it's very cosmopolitan, it's got a different vibe, which I think you very much feel as an immigrant, sort of like going elsewhere in the UK. Whereas I kind of feel like Paris, if anything, is more French than other places in France, if that makes sense. Kind of like aggressively French, which I just kind of find annoying, and it makes it quite intense, I think, as a result.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's also its own world in the sense that it's got like nice neighborhoods and all with their like identities. Some also are like mostly immigrant and all that is nice. But it's aggressive. It's aggressive in the sense that if you're not Parisian, if you don't look Parisian, because that you really can tell, Parisians will look down on you. And when you come from anywhere else, from France, either for like tourism or to move there, you don't realise at first that's how it works. You just assume that it's going to be a city like all the other cities that are just, you know, cities when you can be yourself. This one is a lot about being a Parisian.
And I do think as well, actually talk about the geography of it quite quickly, is the fact that Paris is actually tiny. And because it's got that, you know, it's got the walls basically around it, it's intramuros and whatever. So yeah. I think Paris could not grow in the way London did. So I think that's why you've got so many people piled up in the tiniest of spaces, which is why you've got that sense of like, it's really intense and, you know, you can't really escape from people at all.
And the traffic is horrible as well.
But the Paris inside Le Périphérique is not like the whole of, I mean, it's official Paris, right? But like, there's a lot of stuff outside. Being in zone 3 or something in London?
No, yes and no, because I feel like in London you can very much live in sort of like, I think you could probably reasonably push it to zone 4 or 5 and still say, I live in London. In Paris, if you leave those walls, like if you live intramuros, you don't live in Paris.
And it's not the postal code, it's not Paris anymore. So, yeah. It's either you're in or you're out. There's no blurred, like...
But there are bits that are, like... I mean, there's places on the metro outside. There's, like... I mean, like...
It's still
La Défense is not technically in Paris. I was in a place called Ponton, which I've been mispronouncing all along, but just to the northeast,
Ponton,
which is...
Ponton's the other way around.
It's northeast. If you keep walking along the Canal de Saint-Martin...
Oh, no, that's not La Défense.
No, I'm saying it's also not in Paris. But that felt quite...
It does.
It felt like sort of Shoreditch, Dorstony.
Oh, yeah. You know? It definitely looks like Paris. It's just not officially Paris anymore. But it's also starting to, like, expand, as in, like, Intramuros doesn't really make sense anymore. Now that, like, as you said, the metro's going, like, far in the suburbs, and that there's got the... We've got the RER, which would be, I guess, like, a mix of the overground
Thameslink.
But so these are old, but they were supposed to bring in the suburban people, so they were not, they're not considered Parisians.
But it feels like a harder border in Paris is the point.
It really feels like you're either inside. Yeah.
Whereas like London, like we've talked about this in the podcast before, London it's actually quite difficult to turn in where it stops because I did technically grow up in London, but no one in proper London thinks I did. But it's still on the tube. It's still 7-6 and so on. But it's still, it kind of fades out like that, whereas Paris is just like, here is the line.
Yes.
And I say like psychologically and socially as well, because I think that a friend of mine moved to, is it Vichy, the neighbourhood? That's same, I think it's literally like 3 metro stops after. No, it's not. Anyway, I can't remember where it was, but she moved to like a bit, sort of, you know, and that was literally 3 metro stops after sort of, you know, like the end of Intramuros. And generally, just trying to get anyone to go to her house, because that's where I used to stay when I go to Paris, was impossible. And it was generally sort of like a 20-minute metro ride from most of the places where like all our friends lived. But they were like, you know, we have to go all the way there. And it's like, Jesus Christ, it takes me probably more time to walk from my end of Peckham to the other end of Peckham than it would like take you to just come, you know, like slightly sort of go over the border.
Yeah, I completely agree. And there's a point when, like, when you're close to the border, even, because I used to live in Guimauquet, which is really close to the border with Saint-Denis and like Anières-Gennevilliers. And even at that point, which is still Paris and officially still Paris and close to Montmartre and everything, people are already like, it's too far away. Yeah, it makes no sense.
So is the point here just that Parisians are a massive pain in the arse?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I was kind of curious about the thing you said about like Paris being aggressively French in a way. Like, actually, this is the most aggressively English or British bits of London. Are the bits you never go to. It's like, you know, all the sort of touristy bits, which if you actually live here, until they sort of pop up in like the background of Paddington or whatever, you kind of forget they exist. Whereas like Paris, it kind of feels like Paris is those places because it all looks like that. So is that the point, that it's kind of like, it's sort of a movie representation of itself almost?
You could argue that it's the same for Britishness, actually, because if you'd ask a tourist, they'd say that, like, the most British part of London is, like, Buckingham Palace or, like, the very obvious British things everyone knows in the world. And it's the same with Paris. Like, I feel you could say that Paris is the most French city that exists, but then you'd be thinking about a French thing as, like, wearing a beret and, like, eating baguette. And it's still a cliché in the sense of, like, Paris is very cliche French, but if you go anywhere else, it's the actual French, as in just, you know. I mean, I don't even know how to describe that, just not Paris.
But I think it's also Paris, I do think, has that weird... So, like, Parisians at least have this kind of, like, self-mythology as well, both on an international and a national level. So, you know, like, when you just look at the amount of books that have been published of, you know, Eat Like a Parisian Woman, Dress Like a Parisian Woman, and these are books for a French audience as well. And I think that you would not really see something like that in London. And if anything, I think there'd be quite a backlash of saying, hello, you know, provincials, here is how to dress like a London woman, like, you know, a proper person. That there would be, you know, obviously, like, I think that would turn into a bit of a scandal, whereas in France, that's kind of accepted.
Yeah, no, a thing I thought a while back is I went on like a boat tour up the Seine when I was there as a tourist many years ago. And it had this, did one of those voiceovers that kind of cycles through like 3 or 4 languages. And it was so pompous. It's like, you know, this is the grandest palace on the river. It was built in 16, you know, it was like, you know, properly sort of, you know, it's the most beautiful sight you will see today, that kind of. Whereas like I went on the London equivalent And it's some Cockney geezer making stuff up and cracking jokes to the tourists. It's like, it just feels like a very different attitude to what a city thinks of itself.
Yeah, that's the best definition of Parisians. They take themselves very seriously.
It's, yeah, because I remember actually, because I grew up in Nantes, which is, I think, around sort of like half a million people. And then if you count the suburbs, it's about a million. So it's quite big. I think it's the sixth city in France. I remember when my mum used to work in a dentist office, and she came home one day really angry, and she was like, "Oh God!" Like, so I've got this, you know, so like client who comes in quite often, and at some point we had a chat, and I asked him, "Is that, you know, so like what actually brings you to Nantes? Because you'd mentioned being Parisian." And he was like, "Oh, you know, I just really wanted to retire in the countryside." And so it's half a million people. That's not the countryside. And he lived in the city as well. So I think it's that kind of spirit.
Oh, my God. I come from a town of like 20,000 people, which I would still not consider countryside because everything that's around it really is countryside. This is insulting to, like, literally anyone who's not Parisian.
So this is what we've had to grow up with. So hence the, like, de-bitterness.
Yeah. So even when you move there, you can never really be Parisian. You can pretend to be, which is a lot worse.
I kind of think that feels like another difference because, like, you can be a Londoner from anywhere in the same way I think you can be a New Yorker from anywhere. It's a city of, like, having said that, I grew up in a place that proper Londoners don't really consider London. Like, most people who live here think I do come from London because I came from somewhere you have to tube and so on. Hmm. It's like, by the standards of people who live in inner London, I was always here because so many people sort of adopt it as their home. Does that not really apply?
It doesn't really. You can become a, like, Parisian expat. Like, you can be an American who lives in Paris and who, like, embraces Paris and Frenchness in a way that no French people would ever do. And that would still be accepted. Like, you'd still be part of Paris, but you'd never be Parisian. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, you know, and I completely agree as well, because I do think that being Parisian, as we've sort of talked about, is very much about having quite a strong identity, a sense of identity. And I feel like what I quite like about being a Londoner is, again, I mean, as you touched upon, is that you can basically come from anywhere in the world, and as long as, you know, maybe you've spent a few years here and you've kind of, you know, like, got used to all the, like, city customs, and you call yourself a Londoner, then people, I find, would accept that. Obviously, there's, you know, I think, debate to be had about how that changes with, like, race and class and everything, but broadly speaking, I think it's a lot easier to become a Londoner than it is to become a Parisian.
It is, yeah.
So what does the rest of the country think of Paris, then?
We all hate it.
But is it in the same way that, like, you know, the rest of this country hates London as well? Which has become painfully clear the last couple of years. But, I mean, is it the same phenomenon, or is there something else to it?
It's the same hate towards the capital, I'd say. Because it's also where everything is. It's all where, like, all the jobs are, all the power is, all the rich people who, I mean, not all of them, but most of them will, like, live in Paris or at least have a pied-à-terre in Paris, all that kind of thing. So, yeah, it's definitely the same kind of elite from Paris.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I don't know, because I feel like, and I know that, you know, geographically, like, France is just bigger than the UK, but I don't know, I kind of think that you can very much, I know, like, for example, because that's a conversation I had with French friends quite recently, I mean, sort of, like, French acquaintances, who are kind of, like, youngish, so, like, mid-30s, slightly yuppie, artsy couple, who come from Lyon,
mm-hmm.
And they were like, oh, you know, like never move to Paris. I didn't think of doing it. They've got this small kid, whatever. And they're actually, funny enough, like thinking of moving, and they're kind of trying to decide between Nantes and Bordeaux, which I thought was really interesting for people who are kind of like, broadly speaking, people like us, or like middle class, like really sort of like artsy, media people. And it did not, you know, the fact that A, they have choice, like, of several big cities they could move from and actually still have careers there, but also that, you know, they have no desire whatsoever to move to Paris, so that's not even an option they've considered. And I feel like in the UK, you'd rarely see someone saying, I don't know, like, let's say someone who works in the media, were, like, living in Bristol and being like, oh, I can fancy a change, like, where should I go? Like, Manchester, like, whole Liverpool. I think that, maybe that's because I live in London, I didn't see that, but that feels to me like it's a less likely thing that people would say, because London is, I think, even more overwhelming as a capital than Paris is, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it definitely is.
Sorry, that was a bit ranty, but there was a point in there.
I did hear some stats earlier that something insane, like 40% of graduates from top universities move straight to London.
Yeah,
because that's where all the graduate career paths are. Because if you want to work in finance or the media or even a lot of the science stuff, unless you're attached to a university, all these opportunities are in London. They're not in the rest of the country, which is why everyone hates us.
And also, actually, so to finish on that, I think what I found really interesting is looking at people I went to high school with in Nantes, and a lot of them moved to Paris to do their studies, because obviously, like, most of the best universities are in Paris. But actually, gradually, I've seen quite a lot of them move back to other cities, either like our hometown or like somewhere else. That, you know, they could like do their studies in Paris, maybe do a few years there, and then actually move back, or like, at least move outside of Paris, which I've not really seen happen in the UK to the same extent.
Yeah, there's also the problem of like London, but on a small scale, there's the problem of like housing, and just everything's just so expensive that, I mean, you mentioned your friends who have a child, I guess it's also may also not have been an option because like Paris is just so expensive and you get something that's so small. But yeah, in general, I see the same with my friends. Like, I befriended a lot of people when I went to uni in Paris, and even the ones who are from Paris or around Paris are now considering just moving to another city, like Strasbourg, for example. It's got a lot of postgraduate schools, like there's a lot of post-uni things, and studies or just jobs are not necessarily in Paris or like research.
So in terms of how French cities work, are there mayors? How much power does the average French commune have over its own destiny?
A lot.
I'd say a lot. Like,
Everyone's got a mayor. Every single village has a mayor. Everywhere.
But are they
even a mayor's association, which is really like politically powerful.
I didn't know that.
You can cut this bit. Do you know why I know this? And I've taken a keen interest in the Association of Mayors.
No, I want
Do you know who the president is?
Oh, no. What's his name again?
Is this your random crush?
It is. François Baron.
Comment François Baron?
Yeah.
I feel I should tell you, I'm definitely not going to cut that bit.
Okay, fine. but yes, no, so there's an association which is actually really powerful politically.
What?
An association of mayors of the towns of France.
Are they all elected?
Sorry?
So what does he do?
I'm not sure. I don't know.
He's just a nice face.
Well, yeah.
So all these guys elected? Is it all like direct elections in every town?
Yeah, it's everywhere at the same time now. It didn't always used to be, but now it's with mayoral elections. Our last ones, I think, were in 2014.
I'm just jealous of, like, imagine having that many mayoral elections to cover. That'd be brilliant.
it's a nightmare.
For me, specifically, not for anyone else on the planet, don't get me wrong. But like, how much power do these guys have? I mean, are they more, like, can they actually sort of reshape a city in a way?
I do think they can, obviously, yeah. That's, and again, that's kind of more my experience as a former resident of Nantes, as opposed to, like, someone who writes about politics, because I don't actually know that much about the actual side of stuff. But what I always found in my hometown is the fact that, so we had Jean-Marc Ayrault as our mayor, who was briefly the prime minister. Go us.
Yes.
He's really nice. I met him as a child and terrified him. Weird story involving
you
stilts.
You terrified him?
Yeah.
Whoa.
I was on stilts. It's a long story. Okay. Anyway, and you know, and I feel obviously like the history of Nantes is that it's always been historically quite a rich place, partly because of the slave trade, which is not ideal, but then just in general, so like a wealthy place, but it's also always been left-wing. So our mayors have always been left-wing. And so as a result, see, we've got this place which punches way above its weight in terms of like the art scene, culture and everything. And I think that does very much come from the fact that budgets and stuff, like there's a lot more devolution than there is in the UK. So Nantes was always able to go like, hey, we're quite rich, we like random artsy stuff, we're just going to spend a lot of money on that, in the way that other cities didn't necessarily do.
Yeah, no, I don't really know much about Nantes, but I do know it's kind of like defined itself as this kind of like Breton cultural capital, right? Is it Breton?
Don't say that, Dave. Whoa. Say that again.
We're not from Brittany.
Is that, I mean, it's kind of, isn't it?
It used to be the capital of Brittany ages ago, and then it wasn't. No, we don't want to be part of Brittany. They don't want us, because then Rennes would get angry. We are not, like, Pays de la Loire. Jesus.
I don't really hold with the post-revolutionary boundaries, to be honest. I'm kind of much more into the original provinces. Right. They've all got silly names, like Nord Pas-de-Calais. It's just like, you know.
Oh, yeah, Nord Pas-de-Calais.
Just like, well, we'll just give it two names and stick a dash
between
them.
Yeah, it's Eau de France now.
Which even
Higher France? Like,
yeah, Highs of France.
The Highs of, yeah. I'm not even sure how you translate that.
I don't know, either. High levels, that makes no sense.
Mm.
If Nantes is culture and it's definitely not Breton, what are the other major cities? Like, what do they, when I say, I don't know, Bordeaux, what do you think of when I say Bordeaux?
Okay, let's try by like...
Bordeaux, what do I think? I think there's a lot of students. It's a very studenty place.
It's really nice as well, and it's quite rich as well. Everything on the coast is quite rich.
Okay. I'm thinking, I don't know a lot about Bordeaux.
Okay, let's move on from there.
Like, so after that, there's Toulouse, and then...
You've got Marseille, which is basically world unto
itself.
Marseille
is the second biggest one.
Marseille. I've been like half a dozen times. I've really properly fallen. It's just like, it's... Not even Marseille itself. I think I just really like the south of France and the fact you get a nice climate somewhere that I can get on a train from London straight to the Mediterranean. I think that's really what I'm saying here. I do like Marseille, but it's mostly that there's a train that goes from very near my house that takes me to the Mediterranean.
It's very
that
annoying,
I like.
Though, because I cannot get back home on the train because no one in the UK wants to visit the east of France.
Like, I mean, no one in France wants to visit the east of France.
True.
Although, I think historically German armies have been quite keen, so...
They have. We don't tend to like these, but yeah. Mm. No, Strasbourg is really nice. It's also quite a big city. And Lille?
Yeah, so Lille is quite like the...
Lille's quite
I think it's trying to
it?
Sell itself as the, kind of like post-industrial, but now like tech, like whatever, the city of the future. I think that's kind of how it's trying to market itself now.
And then
what about Lyon? What's Lyon known for?
Lyon's really, it's quite nice.
I think it's all right.
Yeah, it's where...
I don't have a lot to say about Lyon.
It's where Saint-Exupéry is from, the guy who wrote The Little Prince. So you've got like little princes everywhere there. But yeah, no, nothing much. I mean, it's quite big in like the arts as well. And I see it as like an option to where people would move. A lot of the time, they're like my friends, for example, either are like in Strasbourg or in Lyon because it's quite close and quite big. But at the same time, it's not as expensive as Paris, and it's not Paris.
But something that seems to be a pattern here is like all these cities that we're naming. You guys are saying, "Oh yeah, it's quite nice." It's like whereas like you go through a list of the 20 biggest British cities, and most people are going to go like that one's poor, that one's a bit depressed, that one's a mess. That was really dirty. Is that, like, it feels... Has the wealth been more successfully spread in France? Or is it just the Brits are terribly snobs about each other?
Yes and no. I think it's been spread in a better way across cities. But I think there's going to be a lot of inequality between cities and sort of, like, smaller towns and the countryside.
Yeah, definitely. And also from different regions. Like, we were talking about Les Hauts-de-France, which is north of France, which is where Lille is, and the east where I'm from. Like, both are quite, like, post-industrial and therefore quite poor because nothing really happened after the mines and, the coal industry. Whereas the coast is still, like, very rich and, like, south of France obviously has all the tourism. So it's still... It's not exactly balanced, but in between cities...
And then the middle bit as well.
Yeah.
I am yet to find out what's in the middle of France.
Big hills on
Clermont-Ferrand, but it's quite small and there's really nothing to do there. But it's nice. I mean, if you like hiking, it's great.
Is Limoges in the middle? I can never remember where Limoges is.
It's north of Clermont, I think.
I don't really know where Clermont is, so this is not really
Clermont
helping.
Is like literally, if you come from Paris and you go south, it's literally just like in the middle.
Cool.
And yeah, it's actually the middle.
But yeah, so that bit is just awful. The middle bit, like, you could just get all in front, so like no one would miss it. Sorry,
there's lots of like mountains and stuff. I mean, it's not where you go to like.
Rubbish, though. I mean, cities are far better. But like the standard thing in most developed countries, like cities will be the richest, most productive bits.
Britain, well, England specifically, is weird in that it's not like that. And actually, outside like London and Bristol and some of the smaller ones, the cities are kind of less productive and poorer than the area around them. And that's kind of unusual. So it just sounds like France is kind of fitting the standard model a bit better here.
Yeah. The fact that we say they're all really nice as well is because they're all from quite different places and therefore look very different. Like,
yeah,
one is in Brittany, which is like obviously very like coastal and maritime, and then you go to Strasbourg, which is like in Alsace and has like this German vibe. You'd go to Paris, which is looks very pretty and is like almost a museum, and then you go to Rennes, which like or Brest, which feels a lot more like maritime.
Brest.
Oh my god.
You've clearly been here too long if you started finding that funny.
I know.
Anyway, yeah, so they all look very different and they've got very different climates. So you just, yeah, if you were from one place in France, you'd like the other bits because they don't look like where you're from as well.
So I really like France. It's like, it's kind of got, it sounds like the economy's doing, but it's more evenly spread than here. You've got more opportunities. You've got, as I understand it, less of a housing crisis.
Just slightly.
You've got better options when it comes to climate and stuff. Why are you guys here?
I seriously don't remember. I'm asking myself this question right now.
Okay, well that's cheerful. Okay,
right. I mean on a slightly nicer note. I don't know. It's just, I think my issue is that I always wanted to be a journalist, and you know, sort of like properly, so like go for it and try and work for national papers and stuff. And that would have required me moving to Paris. And again, you know, I don't know if like that really came across earlier, but I really don't like Paris. So yeah, London kind of felt like the second best option. And also, and I think that's a different topic, maybe for a different time, I don't know. But I do think that, you know, I kind of had this image as well of the UK. Because I sort of, you know, grew up like, you know, on like on MySpace and doing like all the like indie music years. And so I kind of thought that London was mostly just sort of like Pete Doherty and like Carl Brandt and whatever. And like, you know, people getting drunk and wearing those like red, you know, like military jackets and stuff. Which it's not quite that, it turns out, but you know.
I mean, I spent most of the noughties doing that, obviously, so that was very much my thing.
On a slightly less depressing note, I also am here for like job related reasons, and because London was like in all my favourite fictions, all my favourite books, all my favourite like films. Like it feels like both the UK and London were like this dreamed version of like a city that was dynamic and modern and great, and is and still is. I mean, it's very much what we found. Ooh. I think that's why we're still here.
And I do think that you're definitely more free to be. I mean, I don't know, that's going to sound really sort of like, I don't know, but I do really feel like you have more freedom to be the kind of person you want to be in London as opposed to Paris or anywhere else in France.
Yes.
And again, that's more of a sort of like cultural thing, but I do think that, yeah, in London, you know, I feel like there's so many things, even just small things like outfits I've worn or like colours, like, you know, I've dyed my hair or like whatever, you know, stuff that I've done in London, especially when I was younger and a bit more of an idiot, which I never could have done in France. So I could have, you know, got that out of my system.
Okay, I'm going to ask you what they are when we stop recording, but not now.
Ooh.
We'll leave that one to the imagination. Okay, just one more question. So was the wide variety of bins on option in London a factor here?
Oh, yeah. No, it's just because before we started this podcast, I was wondering where I could say, and I remember that whenever I'm trying to be a guide to someone visiting in London, we cannot find any bin. Bins are nowhere to be found. And maybe it's just central London, but it drives me mad.
I've actually noticed that before as well.
And it's not the same anywhere. Even in Paris and anywhere else, any other city, you have bins anywhere. Because maybe just because we don't pay people to like get the rubbish from the street as often as you guys, but...
No, I think I can actually explain this. It was the IRA.
Oh, right.
Oh.
Like, yeah, they did. When I was very young, they still had bins in tube stations and they took them all out during the early 90s when there was a run of... Because like, this is something that gets forgotten now, is that like there used to be a point where like London would get bombed about like 3 or 4 times a year, and very few of them ever killed anyone. And they would always sort of ring in with warnings. But generally speaking, like a bomb would go off at some point. Like, I had a near miss when I was like 10. And like the place I was with my mother and friends of the family got blown up later that night. But like this just used to happen all the time. So it was a security measure. And I suspect like the onset of austerity hasn't helped, where they just kind of like, yeah, we don't need bins. We don't need street cleaners. We can like, you know, but everyone loves Paris. Paris is really dirty and smelly. Why can't we be like that? So.
And still, and yet we do have bins in Paris. It's just disgusting anyway.
So okay, last question. Why does Paris smell of urine?
No one knows.
Yeah, no, I think that's one of the big secrets.
They wash it quite a lot, don't they? There's a whole thing where they clean the streets.
And yet the stench is just like, when you get onto the metro, that stench.
And there's a bit at Saint-Lazare. I've come to literally do everything I can to avoid it, but I cannot. It's when you change from basically any line to the 13th. Which I guess you should avoid to start with, but I lived on it, so I had no choice. And it just, whatever you do, it just stinks like piss. There's nothing you can do. I think I got a lot better at, just taking my, keeping my breath. Just because I would literally walk, all throughout this corridor without breathing. Because it was the only way to go through.
Paris is the most beautiful city in the world.
It's not. It's not. Go to Aix-en-Provence. Go to Brittany. Go to, I don't know, wherever else. You'll find something better.
We'll see you next time.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.